Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
Okay. Just get settled in. Hello, gang. We're all ready. As we approach the Christmas holidays, are you all getting ready? Yeah? Okay. I guess this will be our Christmas edition, right? I guess so. Okay, well, we've got a few things to talk about, including some Christmassy stuff, so we'll just jump right in, right? Okay, look at you with your Christmas Santa hat on, Reggie. Very nice. Oh, and I see you have some red peppers on your submarine sandwiches and some pimentos in your bologna on that sandwich. So that's very Christmassy of you. All right, levels are good. Mic is on. Talent is ready. We're all set to put this baby up in the air. Let's do it. Episode 187, write it in the books. Three S's, star, smile, and strong. Merry Christmas, everyone. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNplus.com, as well as wherever you find your favorite podcast. This podcast is there too, so don't forget to subscribe to that platform and rate this podcast, and best of all, pass it on to your friends. Word of mouth, the best advertising. Tell them that you enjoy Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and so should they. Your recommendation is better than any advertising anyone could ever buy. Episode 187, we're moving our way toward 200. And if you like what you hear now, or you like what you've been hearing over the last several years, or even the last several weeks, whatever it may be in your situation, don't forget, on WGNplus.com, there is a landing page for this podcast, which allows you to go back and sample all previous 186 episodes. Just go to WGNplus.com, hit the entertainment prompt. Within that, there's another one called Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and bang, there'll be 186 episodes for your enjoyment. But for right now, welcome to 187. I will bring up a little Christmas-oriented topic, which I've talked about in the past on and off, but it will be fitting. But my because this will be posted probably on Christmas Eve, if you will, the eve of Christmas Eve, on December 23rd. At least it'll get up there for the rest, for the whole world to hear. I am recording this a little in advance, but it should be you will be listening to this at least on the 23rd, which is Christmas Eve Eve. That's a new holiday I've just invented. The goal is to spread the Christmas cheer as many days as you can. You know, in England they have something called Boxing Day, which is the day after Christmas. So, you know, you want to stretch that out. And don't forget, many people aren't even aware that, you know, the song, The 12 Days of Christmas, the 12 Days of Christmas don't start on, you know, December 13th and go to the 25th. Just the opposite. They start on the day after Christmas and go 12 days to January 6th, which is the Epiphany, which is really when the three wise men finally made it to the stable to see the Christ child. They were following that star. I don't know how their GPS was that, you know, during those days. It might not have been as exact as it is today. I don't know if the voice told them to, at the next palm tree, take a left. At the next mirage, make a U-turn and then proceed a half mile to the next oasis and turn left. I don't know what the directions were, but it took them 12 days to get there, all right? They saw the star, and it took them 12 days from wherever they were. And that's why I've said many times that when I set up my nativity, when I put up my Christmas decorations, which this year I put them up, I believe, on November 20th. It's getting earlier and earlier every year. My three wise men are not anywhere near the stable right now. They started out on November 20th in the kitchen, which is about as far away that they can get from where they wind up in the other living room. And I put them there, and then I inch them a little every day. And even now, they are maybe in the dining room, I think. Maybe about three quarters of the way in the dining room. But they still have, 12 more days, much more, even after Christmas. They still have 12 days. They have to make their way through the dining room, through the small little vestibule, into the living room, and then into the little side room. So they've got a long ways to go. Your three wise men on your nativity scene should not be there when you set it up anytime before Christmas. And, sorry, I'm a stickler, Jesus baby should not be in your nativity until Christmas Day. Now, you could do it at 12:01 on the 25th, which is what I do. I'm usually up at midnight, and after midnight on Christmas Eve, turning into Christmas Day, then I go and get the baby Jesus, which for right now is being held in a very secure place, basically the piano bench. That's where baby Jesus is right now. He's in the holy piano bench, and he will emerge from the holy piano bench and then be put in the middle between Joseph and Mary on Christmas Day. But that is the real way to do it. And you say, Jim, you're such a stickler. Yes, I am, because that's the story. He wasn't born yet. If you're recreating the scene, then do it right. No wise men until the 6th, no baby until Christmas Day. And you say, geez, I don't even keep my stuff up until the 6th. Well, you should. That's part of it. The Epiphany is a major deal in the entire Christmas story. So you should keep them up, your decorations, or at least your manger and your creche, your precipio, if you will, your nativity scene. You should keep that up at least until January 6th. Even if you take everything else down in your house, the tree comes down, the ornaments come down, the Santas come down, everything comes down, it's all packed away. You should at least, if you are, Roman Catholic or Catholic or even Christian, right? I guess, I was born and raised Catholic. I assume all Christians do that. If you have a nativity scene, you keep that up until January 6th. That's when the wise men came. That's the big payoff. Because they brought the frankincense and the myrrh and the gold. How do you think, Joseph was a poor carpenter. That gold and that frankincense and that myrrh came in handy, I think, for Jesus's college education. Sadly, he didn't live a long life. He was only 33 when he died. But, Joseph and Mary had to still pay the bills for those 33 years, even though, it was pretty, he left pretty soon. He wasn't any slacker. He wasn't any millennial. Jesus was not, like today's youth, sticking home for a long time. Although, I believe... If I remember the story now, his whole ministry, maybe Jesus was staying around with Joseph and Mary for a while. Maybe he was still sleeping on the couch. Because I believe that his entire ministry was only maybe 3 years. The story goes that he was 33 years old when he died. And so maybe he was 30. Maybe Jesus was the original millennial. Right? He was he's 33 years old. That's right in the wheelhouse of a millennial. Jesus may have been the ultimate millennial. So there you go, millennials. You say, okay, boomer, you're right. Millennials, you have Jesus. Not bad. But anyway, but that's not even what I want to talk about. My other thing that I'll try to get in here in today's podcast is my annual Christmas card discussion, and let you know what happened about that, and my theory on Christmas cards, and what my new over the last 4 or 5 years has been the new tradition of Christmas card sending. So I'll let you know about that. But what I wanted to talk about for the bulk of the podcast this week was the new reality of our household here for the last several weeks, and probably be lasting for a few more weeks at least. In early December, my wife had some foot surgery. And it wasn't overtly serious, but it certainly was something that was needed because she was having a tremendous pain in her foot for a long time, for many years, in fact, on and off. She seemed like it was something with her nerve in her foot. She went to many doctors. I don't know if these doctors took her, you know, so often, sadly, doctors a lot of times do not take your ailments all that serious. You know, I know they've seen it all. And so they're like, oh, here, you know, soak it, put some ice on it, take an aspirin. Oh, it'll go away. And, you know, the person who has the ailment continues to have this pain over months, or in my wife's case, years. And it's like, hey, it's not going away. And it's actually hurting more now. And so thankfully, she finally found a foot doctor that actually did what the initial doctor should have done perhaps, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years ago. She's had this problem in varying degrees that long, if not longer. And obviously, it's only just gotten worse to the point now where it got almost unbearable. And so finally, a doctor, I guess when it was so obvious, did the right thing, finally. Which I don't understand what took so long is to take an MRI or an ultrasound of her foot to see what's going on in there, as opposed to just feeling around and hearing the symptoms and then just sort of going, oh, well, I guess it's blah, 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 blah. No. You know, she went to a podiatrist, and she had gone to one in the past. But this guy was like, well, no. In fact, it sounds like it might be this. And ultimately, what happened was they found out that she had, and we found this out just the other day after talking to the surgeon when she went up for a new checkup after the surgery. She had, I mean, this is amazing that it was this size. I don't even think he realized it was this size, even with the MRI and the ultrasounds that he did before the surgery. She had a lime-sized tumor, not malignant, you know, just a growth, but a lime-sized tumor on one of her nerves in her foot. So while it wasn't necessarily where she stepped, it was on the side of her foot, so it wasn't as if every time she took a step, she was feeling some pain, but the fact was that this pain would come at any time, perhaps. It was almost like a surprise pain, you name it, because whenever the nerve was irritated, it would just, you know, completely just drive shooting pains in her foot, even up her leg later on as the tumor got bigger. But this easily could have been, I'm sure, could have been taken care of many years ago when this tumor was much smaller. And she wouldn't have had to have suffered this long. It wouldn't have been, maybe, who knows, they could have, you know, done it with a little less invasive surgery. Thankfully, the surgery went very well. The doctor was actually smiling. He's almost doing the little leprechaun kick. He was so happy with how the surgery went, because I think he was expecting it to be a lot more complicated. Anytime with a nerve involved, he thought he might have to take this tumor out in sections microscopically. He was expecting this to be a 3-hour surgery on the short end, and it turned out to be much less time. And he was amazed at how, he says, "Oh my gosh, it went just perfectly. He was smiling, you know, which I'm sure from a doctor's standpoint, from a surgeon's standpoint, when something goes better than expected, I think this is where they really get a nice kick about their job, because so many times, you know, surgeons go in and they always come back with bad news a lot of times, or, oh my goodness, we also found this. They always have to impart some bad news. Well, the good news is we got this up. The bad news is we found this, blah, blah, blah. Or many times they're just dealing with people that are, you know, very ill, and even though they're removing something, this might just be one in a series of problems. But this was a very singular problem, and apparently it was able to be removed rather quickly and easily without a lot of time involved, and not a huge incision that was going to take months to heal. So, thankfully, this all went very quickly and successfully, and she's on the mend, and so that's good news. But at the same time, it was the size of a lime, which is, as I said before, pretty big. And so they took it out, and, you know, there's going to be some nerves that need to regenerate or refire, and there's going to be some numbness in her foot. But because they did have to just, you know, this thing was entangled in a nerve. But anyway, so that's the great news. And hopefully she should be back and around and walking and sometimes just laying down on the couch watching TV, and we get these horrendous shooting pains from this thing. So hopefully that period and that experience is done with. The doctor, as I said, seemed very, very positive and optimistic that, okay, this is done. This pain, this terrible pain that you've been experiencing, and for whatever reason, probably shouldn't have been experiencing for this long because other doctors didn't do their job, but this guy seems to have taken care of it, which is great. The other side of the coin is, though, of course, that, for the first week and a half, almost 2 weeks, with a pretty nice scar incision, about 6-7 stitches on it, going down the side of her foot, not across, but down right near her ankle, this thing needs to heal. And if you can't walk on it, you can't put any pressure on it, or it's not going to heal. You know, the skin's going to move and blah, blah, blah. So she was pretty much immobile without, even had her foot in a semi-cast in a splint for the first week, and pretty much had to stay off of it and used a walker and could not put any weight on it at all. Didn't even want the foot to touch the ground. And now, thankfully, for the last week or so, she's had a boot on, able to walk a little better with that. And just the other day, we went to the doctor, and he said, okay, boot comes off, start walking on it. She's walking gingerly, of course, and a little tentatively, but at least moving around now. So hopefully the scar is on the heel, and this episode hopefully will be gone over the next 3-4 weeks or so. And as time goes on, the healing will be done, and then that one-time pain that she's been living with for about 10 years or so will be gone. So that is great news. But what's, the byproduct of any time a friend or a family, especially a family member, of course, has any kind of surgery, which, entails some kind of part of the body which you use on a regular basis, especially a hand or an arm or a leg, that you need, that's obviously going to impair somebody's ability to get around by themselves and their mobility and their ability to just, do things for themselves, do things on their own, which of course can only mean one thing. Elton Jim had to become Elton caregiver for the last several weeks, and that's not done yet. And so I have to say that I've done this in the past, in that the last 3 years of my mother's life, she lived with my wife and I, and we both were playing caregiver to her as her health began to decline and even her mental capacity began to decline. So it was not an easy 3 years at all on a daily basis. And at the same time, my dad was going through the same kind of mental deficiencies with dementia. So much so, his his situation was worse than my mom's, that he was in a facility. So we had, I had both of my parents at the same time going through that. One getting the daily care, thankfully, in a facility. And then my mom with us, because hers were more physical at the beginning. It was only the last maybe 6 months or so where her mental capacities began to decline. So it was a 3-year odyssey, almost to the day, which was ironic. But we certainly got our experience of what it is to be a caregiver on a regular, daily, minute by minute basis. And if for those of you who have done it, I'm sure you can also tell your own stories. It is very difficult. It certainly puts a lot of stress and pressure on all involved, not just the person who is sick, but also the caregiver themselves, depending on how serious the ailment can be, and how much assistance and help the sick person needs on a regular basis. So it's not easy. But in my view, it's not even a question. To me, it was not an obligation. It was a responsibility, and that's the way I view it, especially from my parents' standpoint. I mean, you know, they took care of me when I wasn't able to fend for myself as a little kid, and so I only think that it's only fair that I can do the best for them. So it wasn't the most perfect situation, but it was also a situation I felt, you know, we had to handle looking at it from a realistic point of view as to how to get this done so they both had the best care possible and that they both did not, you know, harm themselves or harm one another or harm anyone else and were taken care of in a caring, good way. And thankfully, when each passed, they passed in a very, peaceful way. So that's the best I think you can hope for in that situation. My wife's foot certainly is not in that kind of a dire situation. But once again, she basically for the first, you know, week and a half or 2 weeks was on the couch with foot elevated and basically going just from the couch to the bathroom was pretty much her life. And so everything else I needed to help her with in terms of, getting up and walking around and getting food and getting whatever else she needed, which I did and did it without any kind of resistance at all. But an interesting byproduct came from this caregiving situation and continues. And now I think is going to actually become a permanent part of the daily routine. So there's actually a learning situation occurred here. Who would have thought? And basically what happened is, you know, around the house, it's my wife and me. And so, you know, we just seem to organically, divide the responsibilities of the house, you know what I mean, in terms of doing things around the house. And one of the things that, for whatever reason, I never really learned how to do, I lived at home until I was 26, and then I got married. So I never really had like a bachelor pad on my own. And then I was married. And so I never really did the wash. I never washed my own clothes. I mean, I suppose I did. I don't know, but I don't think I did. I really, now that I think about it, I'm sure I did at one time. But it was never something that was one of my regular responsibilities. And I don't know why. For some reason, the washing and the drying machine scares men. At least initially, we are scared by it. And then you have to face your fears. And that's kind of the end game of this story. But the washing machine and the dryer seem to be scary machines for us. We can use lawnmowers that have these huge, blades on them, and other kinds of power tools, saws and drills that certainly can do great physical harm to us. But as a species, as a gender, we seem to gravitate toward those. And here's the relatively benign washing machine and dryer. I don't believe, if you talk to an insurance person, I don't believe there are a lot of claims made for somebody who was hurt by a washing machine or a dryer that went crazy. I don't think there's any physical injuries from washing and drying. Now, we've certainly heard about, people getting their hands cut with lawnmowers, or somebody drilled into their hand, or someone was using an automatic, screw or nail thing, and they, punctured their, you hear all about these power tool problems. And men, whatever reason, even though they've heard the stories, they still gravitate toward those kinds of machines. And yet it's the washing and drying machine that scares us the most. And we're even more than physical injury or pain. We're more afraid. We're more willing to take a chance to lose a finger than to shrink a shirt. We don't want to ruin our clothes. We have no problems losing an appendage, but God forbid if our favorite shirt shrinks half a size, or gets a splotch on it or something. So we're afraid of the washing machine and the dryer because we have heard these stories, and especially through watching old television shows, especially it seems. How many times did you see in some classic vintage TV show that they say, "Oh, look at you! You shrunk your shirt," and then they bring out a baby shirt, and they say, "Oh my God, you ruined the wash! Look what you did! You put too much starch, or you shrunk it," and they bring out a baby shirt that supposedly was at one time an adult size shirt, but because something went wrong with the washing and drying process, it turned out to be this baby shirt. And yes, I know that's exaggerated, but that visual scares the heck out of you. And you often hear, "Oh, geez, this shrunk in the wash. Oh, there's a bleach stain on this." And so the fear of ruining clothes, for whatever reason, seems to supersede the fear of physical pain and possible physical deformity. But go figure out the male brain and male psyche anyway, right? There's books written on that. So, I must say, while I try to do as much around the house as possible, when it comes to the wash, that's always been, kind of my wife's responsibility. I'll do the garbage, and I'll tidy around, I'll vacuum, I'll dust, and I'll do stuff in the yard, and, fix a bulb here and patch a wall there and stuff. Although my wife is good at that, too. But for whatever reason, those two machines in the corner of the basement are the most scary. And if you think about it, the washing and the dryer, the washer and the dryer, even in most homes, they're always put like in the farthest corner, in like the darkest corner. Like it's almost like this scary place to go. It's almost inviting or creating this kind of mysterious and potentially dangerous outcome when you go to the washer and the dryer. And then there's all these dials, you put it in cold instead of warm. There's all these rules, and it's once again, in the grand scheme of things, it's probably easy to understand, but there's so many knobs. You would think, what I remember when you hear about the olden days, in fact, I still have my mom, I don't know if my mom's or my grandmother's, I have one of those washboards. you know, that they used to use back, you know, 100 years ago, where that's how they would wash clothes, was put, you know, water and soap and then scrub it against this metallic thing with a piece of wood holding it. And that was the washboard, and they rinsed it out and they hung it out on the line. I mean, I remember, I don't even know. I mean, I'm looking around my, in my neighborhood. Does anybody even have a clothesline anymore? Remember the clothesline? I mean, that used to be a, that was just a part of a, at least in the Chicago area, a summer ritual. You couldn't do it in the winter, obviously. But in the summer, I mean, if you flew over an average neighborhood in Chicago in the summer, I mean, you would have to see clothes flying on the clothesline, drying out. That's what everyone did. I don't know what happened to the clothesline. Everybody got these highfalutin dryers, these front-loading dryers, too. Ooh, very cool. So the clothesline, I mean, whoever, I feel sorry for the company that used to manufacture and make a living out of clotheslines, because they have to be out of business. Do not see clotheslines anywhere. But yeah, the whole process of washing and drying just has some, you know, fear factor involved in it. And the big fear is that you will somehow shrink or ruin your clothes. So those two machines with that inherent danger, and then all those knobs, and I'd love to know this, the few times before, which is part of my story here, before I used these two dangerous machines, these life-threatening machines, you know, they have a million knobs, and most times, what do we do when we see a knob or a button? We press it, right? We press it. But for some reason, they complicated the washer and dryer by having these knobs that you pull out just to make it different, just to make it more confusing. Why are these knobs made to push out or pull out as opposed to push in? We push in every knob except on a washer and dryer. That one we pull out for some reason. What's that? What's the logic of that? So I think there was some weird subtle way to keep men away from the washer and dryer. It was almost a sexist engineering. Maybe the guys who engineered the washer and dryer didn't want to do the wash themselves. So they knew that they would mess with this device and make it semi-complex that a guy would not want to go around it. This may have actually been the most ingenious thing ever designed. I would assume initially that it was men who designed the washer and dryer. Maybe they designed it to be counter logical from a man's point of view, so that he would be afraid to use it, so that men would not have to do the wash. I don't know. It's not a bad theory, though. But for whatever reason, it seems as if women initially were given the responsibility of doing the wash. I'm not sure why. I don't know if it goes back to caveman times, but for whatever reason, now times have changed. And obviously, if you go to a laundromat, and if people live on their own, I mean, you know, both sexes are doing their laundry. But anyway, in my house, you know, my wife gravitated toward the washing and drying. I said, look, I'll do everything else I can around here, but that, I don't know, that those two machines scare me for whatever reason, even though I can't lose any limbs or any fingers. It's a relatively two benign machines, but what they can do, they can shrink your clothes. That for some reason was scary enough for me not to get involved. For my whole life, you know, I never really did the wash. But now with my wife's foot, you know, seriously hampered here. I mean, there's no pun intended. There's no way that she can go down the stairs to the basement to do the wash. So I was going to have to, after decades of being able to stay away from those scary, dangerous machines that may shrink your clothes, I had to face my fears and jump in head first. And so I had to face this thing that I had been able to somehow get away from my entire life. I now had to confront the washer and the dryer, because there's no way that she can, you know, walk down the stairs. So I said, look, I said, you know, there's all these scary knobs. For me, when you stand in front of a washer and dryer, from my perspective, it's the equivalent of, you know those old pictures you see of the guys in Mission Control for the Apollo, 11, launches, all those big computers that they used to sit in front of, all those big machines with all the knobs. That's what it looks like to me. When I stand in front of our washer and dryer, it looks like I'm at Mission Control ready to launch a rocket. There are several knobs. The knobs are labeled with designations that I don't understand. Low nits, hot, cold, warm, cold, delicates, rinse. These are words I'm not from. They're not in my daily lexicon. So not only are these knobs, and as you know, especially on the older washers and dryers, I don't know how the new front loaders are. We don't have a front loader. But on the good old, Whirlpools and KitchenAid ones that are 20 or 30 years old, those good old white ones, there's a million knobs, and they've got all these settings and numbers. And, one of these dials you have to, pull out and turn. The other ones you pull out. Some you do press in. How do you know which ones you press, which ones you pull out, which ones, this dial won't move unless you you pull it? I mean, there's just a lot going on, at least to the uninitiated. And it is, like I said, it's almost like you're launching a rocket, at least in my view. So I've been able to, I don't pretend that I know how to launch a rocket. So I have stayed away pretty much, because it's just an imposing and intimidating machine. In fact, I'm going to walk over here and see if I can actually. Yeah, I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 Between the two machines, I've got about 9 dials. 9 dials. That's a lot of dials. So I'm very intimidated when I see this machine. And then, of course, once you hit a button, all of a sudden water. Water is also a scary thing. Water is a scary, scary thing. Anybody who owns a home knows the dangers of water. Electricity certainly has its dangers as well. We all know about the dangers of electricity. But water just does the worst damage, and it always seems to, there's no end to it. Electricity, it seems as if when you find the problem, the electrician can pretty much fix it. But water just, okay, we fixed that, that leak in your roof, and then a week later there's a leak, 5 feet farther down. Water just seems to seep anywhere it wants to go. So, yeah, this machine not only deals with, and think about it, both machines, the washing machine and the dryer, we got electricity and water. You got two of a homeowner's biggest obstacles, biggest enemies, right there in the same process. Because this one machine is throwing water in, God forbid, you know, how many times once I, you know, sadly, I guess I can keep reverting back to Lucy shows. Most of my fears about using the washing machine, I guess, go back to 50s sitcoms, because inevitably there was always an episode where Lucy or somebody put too much soap or too much water in a machine, and of course the suds go everywhere. Or you, once again, you put something in the dryer too much and it comes out baby size. So maybe my fears are completely the fault of Lucille Ball. I don't know. But they're long held. And they have stayed with me until just about a week and a half ago. So I was faced with the reality that I had to do the wash. In fact, I waited long enough. I waited as long as I could before I could see that, no, she wasn't going to be able to walk down the stairs. I thought maybe I might get lucky and she might have some divine intervention and heal really quick in front of all estimates, and she might be able to go down and do the wash, but no, it wasn't going to happen. So finally, it's like, okay, I have to do the wash here. I can't wait any longer. So I had her write down on one piece of paper on both sides what to do to wash the clothes and what to do to dry the clothes. And I mean, and after she wrote these down, I mean, I had to read them over, and then I had to go down and put what her directions next. I had to look at the machines and then come back upstairs and ask more directions. Okay, do you mean this and do you mean that? And finally, I was confident enough, you know, first she's got here, okay, how to wash clothes. Number one, run sink water to warm. She even puts open the lid, as if I wouldn't open the lid on the washing machine. But right, hey, she's not leaving anything to chance, and I don't blame her. Run sink water to warm. Okay, add a capful of Downy to the middle agitator. Okay, here's another thing. So now, you know, I was asking her, so how do I do this? You know, just verbally. And so she's like, well, first put the water in the agitator. What's an agitator? Aside from me. I've been called an agitator, but I never saw one. Little did I know that it's that thing in the middle, in the washing machine, is an agitator, which makes sense because it's agitating the clothes, right? It's moving the clothes. I personally would have named it something else. I don't believe it's agitating. I mean, that's a very human emotion and word to give a mechanical piece of machinery in a washing machine, an agitator. I would have just called it the tumbler. Which is a nice word, the tumbler. Oh, I have rumble in my tumbler. Right? That's my Winnie the Pooh. But no, I mean, an agitator. What an aggressive word. Had to be a man that designed the washing machine to use the word agitator. I understand why you use it, but it seems a little rough. I would say tumbler. But that's me. So I put it in the middle of the agitator. So once again, I don't even know what that means until I take a look at it and realize that there's actually kind of holes in this. And I don't understand, you know, I'd love to see what's going on in the, I wish the washing machine was completely clear. I want to see all this stuff working. If I saw it all working, I think I'd be less afraid. But once again, the washing and drying machine are scary in that they have this lid. And it almost looks like a dungeon down there, and you put the clothes in this dungeon, and then you close this box, and you pull this plug, and then all this noise starts happening, and all this activity, and there's this water, and then there's this rinser and this agitator, which I just found out about. There's a lot of aggressive stuff happening in that machine. You know, I know there's no blades involved, but there's a lot of aggression going on in a washing machine. Now, maybe if it was clear, I would be less afraid. We're all for transparency these days, right? Well, I think we should have transparent washing machines. I want to see what's going on. I will be less afraid of the washing machine if I saw what it's really doing. But once you close that lid, it's like a house of horrors. I don't know what's going on in there. I'm hearing a lot of strange sounds. There's these sounds and these and there's water. I don't know what the hell. It's like a movie. It's like a horror movie in there. It's like one of these tragedy movies. It's like Twister or Tidal Wave. I don't know what's going on in there. So then she says, you know, put the downy in the middle of the agitator and then add the warm water in the same thing. Then add two pods to the wash basin. Okay, this was completely weird to me. I'm like, so I'm putting the pods in the washing machine before the clothes? I always thought you put the clothes in and then you put the detergent on top. Before the pods, I thought you saw people when I watched when I watched people wash clothes. Not that I ever did them. When I watched people, they were pouring the detergent on the clothes. But now she's telling me to put the pods in at the bottom of the basin, and then now they have those little bead things too that make things smell nice. So she says throw the beads in there too in the bottom before you put the clothes in. This seemed to be completely out of order. So I'm starting to look at her like, do you know how to wash clothes? This can't be right. But I shouldn't question, because she's been doing them for almost 30 years, at least in our life together. So but I'm still looking with a questioning eye. I'm questioning the correctness of putting the pods with the detergent and the beads in the washer before the clothes. I still question that, but I did it anyway. Then she says, "Add clothes." Okay, fill basin with clothes. Close lid. That's number six. Close lid. She actually had to write close lid. Which I'm glad she did, because I probably wouldn't have. And now number seven and eight is when I had to take a deep breath, calm my nerves, take my blood pressure pills, because seven and eight on this list were the scariest parts. I was now launching the rocket. I was now at mission control. Houston, we have a problem. Whirlpool, we have a problem. Set dials. Oh, two scariest words in the English language for any man. Set the dials for the washing machine. Here we go. On left, cold/cold, and then large load. So now, once again, these are all new phrases. I don't know what cold/cold. Why isn't it just cold? What does that mean, cold/cold? What is warm/cold? What is warm/cold? Why is there a slash? Water is either cold or warm. Are you telling me that there's two times that I don't get? I guess does water come? Does different temperature water come into that scary, mysterious basin with the lid closed? I don't know what's going on in there. At different times, at different temperatures? I didn't know that. So cold/cold and large load. So now right away, I have to now start reading all these dials. I've got, four dials on one machine and another five on the other. So now I got to make sure I'm on that, because this to me is what, if I don't do these right, I'm going to wind up with those little small Lucille Ball shirts that come out of the dryer. I'm going to shrink something. So okay, this looks right. Large load. Okay, then on right, push in the big dial, turn right, and set it to delicate. Now, here's another question. Why do I have to push this dial in first before I could spin it? Why can't I just spin it? Why are we making extra? I think the designers did this on purpose to just make guys throw up their hands and say, too much going on here. I don't have patience for this. I can't do it. Because why do I have to push in the dial to make it move? I don't understand that. It's an unnecessary step mechanically. There's no need. A dial is a dial. Just turn it to the. Why do I have to push it in and then push it out later? Too much pushing in and pushing out. Knobs are buttons are there to be pressed. Dials are there to be turned, not pressed in and turned. But I did it anyway. So I pushed in the big dial and I found the delicate setting. And then here it says, you know, close lid and pull big knob to start. Pull knob. You don't pull a knob. You press a knob. You press a button. You press a knob. Why am I pulling a knob? It's completely counterintuitive, at least from a man's mind, or at least from my mind. Buttons are pushed. Knobs are pushed. Dials are turned. They're not pushed in and turned. Knobs are not pushed out, are not pulled out. You don't pull a knob. You grab a knob, but if a knob is sitting out there, your first inclination is to press it, just like a button. It's a knob. It's a protruding button. How do you start your car? You don't pull the knob of your car. You press it, right? In today's world, without the key. That's the way a man thinks. Why do you think when they started the automatic ignition, it's a button that you press? Because that's what guys do. We press. We don't pull. Knobs and buttons are to be pressed. Dials are to be turned, not pressed in and turned. So I pressed it, I did it, and all of a sudden the machine started, and I heard water moving in, and I said, okay, I guess I did it. And I went upstairs, and I prayed when I came back down that the laundry room wasn't filled with suds, and sure enough it wasn't. I waited, you know, I heard until I heard the machine done, and there's all the clothes. The agitator clearly did its job. Spun and rinsed those clothes. They're all stuck on the side of the basin now, just like when you go to the amusement park and they have that one ride, you know, that defies gravity where you get stuck on the wall and it spins. I guess it's a centrifuge. I guess it's the same technology, the same idea, just the way we walked into that machine and it starts spinning and we're stuck on the wall. That's what happens in a washing machine. The clothes get spun so much they get stuck to the wall, just like you are in that one ride at Great America. So I pull them out, which now means part two, the dryer. I believe that the dryer is probably the one where we get the most scared, because if we are afraid of shrinking our clothes, I believe it's the dryer that does it. The washer, I assume, contributes to the shrinkage, if you will. But I think it's the dryer that's the main culprit. I don't know. But it's always the end spot. You open the dryer, you pull it out, and then it's the baby size clothes from the Lucy show. So that's what's scary. So now I'm even more scared. I've climbed part of the mountain. It wasn't easy. I did, as they always say, when you watch some of those old footage from those Apollo missions to space, to the moon, you know, yes, there's two times when you're the most the most stressed out. It's the launch of the rocket, and then it's the landing of the rocket. Well, if I'm going to use my metaphor here, I launched my rocket. I launched the rocket. I got the clothes washed, but now I have to land the rocket. I have to bring it home. And landing the rocket in the washing, in the clothes washing world, is the dryer. And I believe that this is the key thing. It's not enough to wash the clothes. The complete job is drying the clothes so you could wear them, right? launching the rocket is good. If that goes well, hooray for you. But your mission accomplished means rocket went up, did its job, came back to Earth, landed, and everybody's fine. That's mission accomplished. I only accomplished one of the tasks so far. The toughest one, I had to land this baby in order to dry these clothes, put them in the hamper, in the basket, and bring them upstairs so they could be worn again. That's mission accomplished. So I've got, I'm confident I did the first part because I followed the directions. But now we gotta bring this puppy home. We gotta land this puppy. Now there's only three steps on drying the clothes, but these seem to be much more complicated. Here we go again. First of all, pull out the lint trap on the top. I didn't even know there was a lint trap. I mean, you know, I look at the top of this dryer, I see all these little compartments, but once again, I never touched them. I didn't know anything about it. Who knew that you open this little door and there's this giant lint trap that you pull out? It's like 2 feet long. Where does this thing even go? It's like a frog's tongue. Who knew? So I open this little flap, and it says pull this thing out, and I keep pulling and pulling. It's like 2 feet long. But sure enough, there's all this lint on it. Okay. Clean the lint, and I stick the frog's tongue back in the mouth. Done. She even found it necessary to say, put clothes from washer into dryer. Okay. Once again, kudos to her. She's being very, very thorough. All right. I put the clothes in there. Step three, scariest two words to a man in the English language who's doing the wash. Set dials. Five dials on this dryer. Five dials. Shouldn't you just be able to open the thing, open the door, throw the clothes, press a button that says dry, and it's done? It's 2019, almost 2020. We haven't gotten to that point yet. With our machinery, with our high tech, with our apps, with all of our satellites and GPS, we can drive across the country. We can send satellites into space, but we can't create a dryer that just allows you to press one button that says dry and it does it? Five dials on that thing scares the heck out of me. Big knob on the left. Move it to dry. Like 1 o'clock on the dial. That dial has so many words and hash marks and scary dry, rinse, low, high, heavies, light. I don't know what the heck's going on. The dryer is, you would think the dryer would be the easy one. But I'm almost finding now that, once again, landing the rocket seems to be much more, if launching the rocket seems scary with those dials, this one seems much more complicated. Way too many things on the dial. Way too many hash marks, words, and basically threats and warnings. That's the way I looked at the dial on the dryer. They were not there to help. They were there to scare. To petrify. All right, so now I keep my fingers crossed, and I put it on dry, and now there's another knob. Light load. Well, now we've got heavy, medium, light. I don't know. I mean, once again, thankfully she wrote this stuff down. How the heck would I know what designates a heavy or a light or a medium load? I don't know that. Once again, how do I know, washing the clothes, that these need cold/cold as opposed to hot/cold or hot/hot? Where are these rules? How do I know this? Thank God she wrote these down. So I move the knob to light load, delicates. Close the door, right, to the machine. And then here's the most, here's finally, after this entire experience, the most logical instruction in my mind. Press the on button. Press the on button. Don't pull the knob. Don't turn the dial. Press the button. I was waiting the whole process for the press word. I finally got it. I shouldn't have to go through all these dials and all these loads and all these rinse and dries and very dries and soaks and whatever. I can't believe in 2020 now, we're practically there, that these two machines can't just, you should hit two buttons. Three tops. But there shouldn't be these dials and pullings and pushes and I have to go to and have to go to school to figure out what clothes should be washed and hot and what. Holy smokes. We should be way past this. So I'm sorry, washing and drying people, if you're designing, come on, get with the program here. It should be two buttons tops. If I can order an Uber by pressing two or three buttons, I should be able to wash my clothes and dry my clothes hitting one or two buttons. Now, maybe our machines are old, and maybe the newer machines have all these newer, and maybe it's easier. I don't know. But I'm telling you, I've got, in my basement, I have mission control. It feels like I'm in Houston. So sure enough, I hit the button. I press the button, thankfully, and machine starts tumbling. Tumbler. I have rumbling in my tumbler. I hear the tumbling. Once again, that's why I would call that agitator a tumbler. This way it is nice in that it combines and sort of, you know, makes a nice little overview. I'm just tumbling the whole time. I'm tumbling my wet clothes and then my dry clothes then are tumbling to dry. Isn't that nice that all the same words are used as opposed to this angry agitator word for the washer? Because tumble is a nice word. Huh, let's tumble. So about 35, 40 minutes later, go back downstairs, clothes are dry. Now, I don't know if it was just me or not, and you know how it is when you do perform a task and it's done correctly. It just feels nice. It feels good. Well, I have to tell you that load of wash, I can honestly say that may have been the first load of wash that I ever did from start to finish. Because a lot of times my wife will say, look, I put the... take the clothes out of the washer. I've opened the door. I've set everything. Just put the clothes in, close the door, and press the button. That's how much she has to hold my hand through this in the past. But now that I have completed my first load of wash, I must say that when I put that load of those clothes on, they felt so clean. They smelled so fresh. I felt as if it was the best load of clean clothes I had ever worn. Now, I don't know if it was just because I did them and I felt a sense of accomplishment or if they really just, they seemed to just float. They just seemed to hang right. When I put on that dry shirt and put on those dry socks and those dry pants, they just seemed like they were cleaner than usual. And they were drier than usual. And they didn't shrink. They were the same size as when I put them in. The agitator didn't agitate them to the point of tearing them or ripping them. And that potentially dangerous dryer didn't shrink them down to the size of Lucille Ball shrunken clothes. I have to say, I'm really enjoying washing clothes. to the point now where I may wash the clothes. I may take that job. My wife might have to do something else. Maybe she has to, you know, fix the light bulbs or take the garbage out. I may, you know, I may take the wash away from her. Because now that the machine seems less scary, I still have to look at all my little notes here. And I have this note now prominently posted right by the washer and dryer. I still don't trust myself to do it without, but I will, I believe, in time. But I'm enjoying washing the clothes. And this is a new, I mean, it took me many years to face this fear, but not only did I face it, but I conquered it, and I believe that I've done an amazing job to the point where I love wearing the clothes I just washed. It's full circle. It's circle of life. It's circle of wash, if you will. So I have to say, not only am I enjoying now learning something far, far longer than I should have done this much 30 years ago, 40 years ago. I apologize to my mom now for having to wash my clothes all those years. And now I'm going to take this maybe away from my wife to say, what, can you wash the clothes? I need my, no, I can do it now. So really, in the grand scheme of this whole thing, not only did I face my fear, but I do owe, I believe, I thank you to not just, you know, or an apology to my wife and my mom for having to wash my clothes all these years, but I also have to thank two people. Well, one person and one thing. I have to thank my wife's surgeon for correctly diagnosing and removing this tumor that she had in her foot that was causing her such pain, which ultimately kept her from being able to walk down the stairs to do the wash. But I have to say, as perverse and odd as this is, I have to thank her tumor. I have to thank her foot tumor, because if she had never gotten this foot tumor, she never would have had the surgery. She would have been able to continually walk down the stairs and do the wash for many more years, and I never would have been forced to learn how to use this and to not only learn how to do it, but then to experience the great sense of accomplishment of launching that rocket and then landing that rocket and then ultimately wearing those clothes that I washed and dried. So at the end of the day, I have to thank this growth that was lemon-sized on my wife's foot. Because if it had not grown on her nerves and caused her pain, I may never have learned how to use the washer and the dryer. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic here at WGNplus.com and wherever you find your favorite podcast. This has been episode number 187. Don't forget, if you download your podcast on another platform, subscribe, rate this podcast, and then by all means, tell your friends, send them a link, send them an email that you want them to listen to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is available for your podcasting pleasure, and your loyalty and your devotion is much, much appreciated. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, the only podcast from the end of the web to your screen. I have a rumbler in my tumbler.